It's really, to me, more that, like, I can actually seek real deep spiritual themes and meaning in this stuff way better than in the, you know, Left Behind crap.
Right. Although I do want to talk about Tribulation Force at some point, because Jeff Fahey kills that shit.
Let's get it on, Arch, and watch the spot get blown. I be the sick lunatic with the devilish poem. From the mist of the darkness, I come with this. Hit it straight to the chest like a private miss. Best director, yeah, the fanatical type. I'm like a bat in the night when it's time to take flight. Here I am in the flesh, and yes, I love cess. I'm obsessed by the sounds the track possess. Intellectual killer, special, majestical. Roping up the devils, have them hanging from my testicles. Nowhere to run to, baby. There's nowhere to hide. There's nowhere to run to, baby. There's nowhere to hide. Yo,
fuck it. Another day, another target. From here to Nantucket, MCs get to walk it. I'm rugged and rough, blowing up till I bust. Swallow the rappers and flatter than a white girl's butt. Came in the first place, world shake your brains like an earthquake. A lot of people admit that I am wrong. I cover my ass like a B.I.M. store.
Hi, this is Sam Furstenberg, director of the martial art classic American Ninja and the breakdance iconic movie Breaking 2 Electric Boogaloo. And you are listening to Grindhouse Messiah with Justin and Blaine.
To intercept the rap of a brother who has kept his status. Stop the madness, that is. I phone just to show that yep. Black.
Go.
Hey, everybody, this is Blaine at Grindhouse. Oh, let me try it again.
Twist my dialect and get caught by tornadoes.
Everybody move it.
Hey everybody, this is Grindhouse Messiah, new podcast from Justin the Painted Man Harlan and
Blaine at Mondo McLaren.
We've been working together on this idea for a podcast now for probably a few weeks. Really kind of jumped out at me as something that I was interested in because I started writing this column for a now defunct website called the Grindhouse Channel. And Blaine jumped right on because it's something that he's really interested in too.
Yeah, rest in peace, Grindhouse TV.
Man, it's a shame. But we'll have some news and the owner of that site on at some point because it's not dead forever. So just keep that in mind. It's not dead forever. But that said, basically, this is going to be our chance to wrestle with our faith and our worldview and kind of all that stuff in light of the films we watch, which Blaine so eloquently described himself by his church community, I believe, as the guy who watches fucked up movies. Is that correct?
Oh, that's right. I mean, I've kind of built a notoriety around me over the years of a guy who just, I love exploitation. I love darker cinema, cheap cinema, sleazy cinema. And it's one of those odd things because on the other side, I'm also, you know, a Christian father. I'm a church member. So kind of working with that dichotomy, I was really excited when you presented this idea because it's like, I've never given a whole lot of thought to what attracts me to this, what I take from it and kind of how it affects my spiritual life, just right. Just being, you know, not to sound churchy, but these ideas. I mean, a lot of the stuff I watch is like, it's at odds with my personal worldview. Mm-hmm. You know, movies. You know, there's nothing I love more than, you know, sleazy revenge movies, things like this. That you know, in all honesty, it's like completely 180 degrees away from my belief system. So I'm really excited to kind of be able to go through this and get a chance to chat about these movies, but also work things out from that perspective.
Right. We said it could be a little bit of our own personal therapy sessions here. We kind of work out how we got here. You definitely seem to have a stronger history with the micro-budget, low-budget stuff than I do, although I'm definitely further into that stuff than your average Joe, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, because like for me, growing up, like the big thing that got me semi-obsessed with this was Troma. Like back when they were putting out, because I was at the age where I started catching, Toxic Avenger sequels, at a friend's house on Showtime. Yeah. Surf Nazis Must Die.
I remember that one.
Right. So once I started, diving back into watching more cheap movies, because I kind of got pretentious in my late teens and my early 20s, but I couldn't let go of just loving this. And the time with my brother, when my brother and I lived together, we spent all of our time just renting everything. We emptied out gas station, rental stores, mom and pop shops, everything, and just watched it all and just caught up on everything that we felt like we had to see. And like, for some reason, I loved stuff that's cheap. I like the authenticity of just a group of folks making a movie.
Yeah.
And how it turns out, I mean, warts and all, to me that's a fun experience. And I think just that whole like kind of punk rock aesthetic of Troma that like just got me jazzed and all the feels. Like, yeah, this is real movies, it's in spite of people I show them to and they're like, Blaine, this just sucks. I'm like, no. These are people working hard on something that's not going to make money. It's not going to appeal to 99% of the population. But who says that's what a movie has to be?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And I think like your appreciation for some of that stuff is still a little bit more than mine. I watched mad props to Todd Sheets, but I watched Purple, Dreaming Purple Neon. God, I could barely get through that movie. I mean, you loved it. So,
I loved it.
Yeah, I know. And it just shows that to each their own, and we're definitely a podcast here that's not here to judge your likes and dislikes. No, not at all. and I think there are some friends of mine listening who will say, well, that's good because Justin likes shit. So they really can't, I can't look down on anybody. But so that said, I'll start just briefly with how I came to know of Blaine, and then a little bit into like kind of my history with faith and film. And then I'll hand it back to you, Blaine, to kind of go from there.
Awesome.
So I actually first heard your name because I listened to Eric Roberts Is the Fucking Man. And that podcast, which we'll definitely shout out to, run by Doug Tilley, and now a guy named Liam O'Donnell's on there with him. Liam and I actually go back. We went to college together. So I've known Liam, and it's just kind of weird how we both fell into that podcast around the same time, not really together. And then he made friends with Doug, and now I've made friends with Doug, the other host, and just kind of he became the co-host because the other co-host left. So I heard your episode and I was like, oh, this guy's got awesome tastes. This is fun. You watch some bad movies with Eric Roberts in them, which is like 90% of the movies they cover on there are bad movies with Eric Roberts in them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I just listened to the Human Centipede 3 episode. And I'll just leave it at that.
Oh yeah. Much respect to Liam and Doug over there. Oh. That is a rough podcast, and good thing Doug's running that show, because nobody else is going to stick to that program.
No, he's the kind of guy that when he makes a decision to do something, he's going to do it. So yes, I give him props, and I think Liam sometimes regrets the blood oath he made to join him there, but nonetheless, I think they're a real fun time. So a little props to that. So that podcast I heard, and I think I friended Blaine on some form of social media. We started talking, and he all of a sudden out of the blue says to me, "Wait, The Farsighted, is that you?" Yeah, that's me. And he was like, "Oh, I listened to that podcast." I was like, "No way! I have somebody who listens to my podcast." And we got talking, and then Blaine soon thereafter started writing for my website, and we've become friends since then. And share a love of some really weird movies. So that's kind of where I got to meet you, and still need to meet you physically, and we're definitely going to need to hang out sometime. I just don't know when the hell I get down to Atlanta. But so nonetheless, but I'll transition into me now. So I grew up a pastor's kid, and my mom was the pastor, which is most people, when they say they're a pastor's kid, you assume it's their father. But no, my mom was a pastor. My dad's an engineer, and my mom still is a pastor, actually. And so I grew up, and my mom was a youth pastor for the early part of my life before she transitioned into kind of running the church. Although I'd say she probably kind of ran the church for a long time before she was actually running it. But that's just my mom. So growing up a pastor's kid, I was heavily immersed in the church, an American Baptist church in northern New Jersey. Very middle of the road, non-political kind of church, actually. So not like the Southern Baptists that people think of when they think of Baptists. They think of people like George Bush. He was actually Methodist, but for some reason people always associate, the Southern Methodists and Southern Baptists together quite a bit. But and you probably have a lot of Southern Baptist churches down in Atlanta, huh?
Oh yeah, we just got a lot of churches.
You're down in that Bible Belt.
Oh, we're the belt buckle of the Bible Belt. Yeah, nice. We got two things. We got churches and Waffle Houses. So.
Yeah. I always loved how
we got our fair share.
I always loved how cities have a lot of churches and a lot of bars, and they're really close to each other, weirdly enough. But
yeah.
But I mean, that's the same up here in Philly. They're just different churches and different bars. We don't have a lot of Waffle Houses, but we sure as hell have a lot of cheesesteak joints, which nonetheless, we could probably do a whole.
As long as you're getting type 2 diabetes, man.
Right. I was thinking, we could probably do a whole podcast about food, you and I, the way.
Oh man! Oh
goodness! But
only thing more shameful than my taste in movies.
Oh man! So, so I grew up there. I was somewhere in like middle school. I got into punk rock, and I was really into punk. But of course, I listened to a lot of Christian punk, which sounds like an oxymoron, but in a way, it actually makes a lot of sense. But I can get into that some other time. But really, I kind of was a punk rock kid who listened to a lot of Christian stuff and a lot of non-Christian stuff. I booked a lot of concerts in my high school years and college years. And film actually was something I always loved, but never really wrote about or got into in a real analytical sense until a few years ago. And so if you look at the archives of my of the website of Farsighted, and if you followed any of my previous endeavors, The Painted Man... .com, and there was another thing called The Farsighted at one point, and I don't know, there's like 10 other things. I've had web pages since I was in like 7th grade. So if you look at any of the archival stuff, you'll see that we did a lot more music and a little bit of other stuff, and now it's like film, 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 here's an album, film, 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 here's something else. So film's obviously something that I'm really, really interested in now, and specifically with writing. I always love writing about film. There's something about the medium. But I've always been interested in weird, offbeat kind of stuff. And so even when I was younger and I didn't have a lot of people that fed me the weirder, darker side of films, I still sought out the weirder things that I could find by walking through Blockbuster or by, staying up late and watching my cousin's HBO. Because we didn't have HBO, but she did. So, things like that. Now, like I said, I've gotten way more into some of the really exploitative kind of cinema, and with that, I find that it really wrestles with a lot of the themes that, even the Bible wrestles with, better than a lot of stuff that's, quote-unquote family-friendly. Let's be honest, Blaine, the Bible's really not family-friendly.
No, not at all. I mean, it's dealing with a lot of the same sort of themes. I mean, look, and let's face it, most stories are. It's just a matter of how much you want to show, and the right. Bible loves showing it.
They really do. They really do. So, Blaine, tell us a little bit about you and faith and film and how you are where you are now.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, like I was saying before, for most of my life, been a big fan of just sleazier stuff. I mean, when you and I intersected, I originally found your podcast through, I believe, a mutual friend of ours, a guy named Josh Cripps, who I grew up with.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, wow. And I never put that together. So you and Cripps grew up together.
Crips and I have been best friends since we were like, I don't know, first day of high school, like since we're about 14 or 15. Oh yeah, yeah. So yeah, he and I go way back, and he had I think on Facebook or something, like reposted one of your first episodes.
He's been a really big supporter of my website for a long time. Yeah, so yeah.
Yeah, so he's a good guy. He put me onto it. So I checked. I was like, man, this is a lot. Everything you're talking about is very similar kind of upbringing in a lot of ways. Right. Always grew up, you know, in the church, but always like I didn't like church stuff. I liked punk rock. I liked shitty movies. I liked all the stuff that, like, basically, you know, youth pastors would tell me was wrong. So, like, the world's worst at that. But, you know, like, I always navigated because, I mean, it's always been a personal thing to me on both sides. The stuff I like, the faith that I believe, all these things. Like, I always thought, like, man, why can't that just be internalized? So going through this, you know, I want to be able to kind of explore those ideas.
Right.
Reconcile the two. I mean, if anyone has read either, you know, my stuff over at The Far Sighted, so check that out, The Far Sighted.
Woohoo!
But also MondoMcLaren.com, which I started a few years ago, where I just wanted to highlight stuff that I liked. Every now and then I put stuff I didn't like, but you'll notice in my reviews, like, I like talking about stuff that I enjoy, stuff that I dig, and just try to overlook, because I like stuff that's homemade. I like this stuff, so there's no reason for me to go tear up some guy who made a 10-cent movie. So in this, I want to also, you know, make sure that we're also turning people on to stuff that we're enjoying, you know, and any listeners, you know, chime in, tell us cool stuff you're listening to as well. So I'm just hoping to just kind of work through those, talk about this and just, you know, kind of continue this friendship in the most public manner as possible.
Sounds good to me. Yeah. So, you know, I'm sure there are other podcasts who do some of this stuff, but I don't think that they quite cover sleaze. and exploitation the way that I think we plan to. So, you know, one of the things I had mentioned when we were talking about what we should do for our first episode is really we're just kind of laying the groundwork on who we are. But I wanted to talk a little bit about a few films that kind of exemplify the intersection of, you know, faith and kind of my personal beliefs and struggles and whatnot, and then like the art that we're talking about, specifically stuff that's in this darker side of genre film, you know. So for me personally, one of the films that really, really jumps out for me is A Clockwork Orange, which is obviously it's weird because it's considered, you know, a great film by a lot of people, probably mostly because it's by Stanley Kubrick. But it's, and it is a great film, but it's also really fucking sleazy. And it's really dark. But I've always loved the way it wrestles with like the totalitarian state and like again, we talked about me being a punk rocker, so that's probably a natural gravitation there. you know, also the way it wrestles with kind of predestination and free will and, you know, society refusing to allow people to change, you know? So it's that's kind of first forcing them to change and then society then not letting them actually change, you know. So there's a lot about that film that really kind of, you know, fucks me up in a lot of ways, but in a way where it's like a lot about, to me, you know, the kinds of things that are important in my faith life too. I'm assuming you've seen Clockwork Orange more than once.
Oh, absolutely. And I've always considered that like the movie that kind of like separates the men from the boys, like as you in like your cinematic journey. There's, because everyone's going to end up, if you care about film, you're going to end up going through, you know, Kubrick's oeuvre. And eventually you're going to hit that point with A Clockwork Orange. And you're either going to probably feel a little dirty after, but like that feeling and start kind of going that, you know, side road and figuring out, seeing more films like it. And then you're going to have the other group that's like, no, I'm just going to go back and watch Barry Lyndon again. So that's where I've always placed that movie, because I think it's an important film. I think that if it didn't have the huge, you know, cinematic god name of Stanley Kubrick on it, it really falls more in line with a lot of the kind of headier, you know, sleazier stuff of that time. And so it's beyond just being important to cinema as a whole, and these ideas of, you know, like you brought up, free will, predestination, what are you programmed to do?
Right.
And the entire idea of, you know, this of how we consume violence.
Yeah.
It's also important to how society views films and violence itself, because a lot of the stuff, I think that opened up a window for a lot of our generation coming up on the VHS era, being able to say, okay, I want to see more stuff like this. I'm willing to drop down the quality to see something more extreme and kind of going that route. So, absolutely. I think it's an incredibly important film on both ends.
Right. What's interesting is that, you know, it's definitely kind of artsy. It's very Kubrick in a lot of ways, which is kind of like a verb or adjective in and of itself, you know, being, you know, which is meaning that it's kind of coldly shot in a lot of ways, but at the same time, there's a weird warmth at times, and it's a weird film, but like it's got, you know, two sex scenes in it, and one which is literally still one of the most effective rape scenes, which means it disturbs the fuck out of me. Effective doesn't mean like I get titillated; it means like I get nervous and ugh. And that would be, you know, the Singing in the Rain scene. Something about juxtaposing that song and, oh God, that whole scene is just awful. And what's interesting is it's not necessarily from a full on what is shown, sense nearly to one of the more graphic scenes I've seen, but the way it's done makes it actually more graphic. You know, it's so effective. But then there's a sex scene in that film that's my favorite sex scene probably of all time, which is just a straight up comedy scene where he's got two girls in his room playing Beethoven, and you can't hear anything, it's on fast forward, and he like bangs them, and then they try to put their clothes on, he pulls it back off and he bangs them again, and then it's like off to the races. It's ridiculous. And I always thought it was funny is that like these two starkly different kinds of sex scenes were in that film, and those always jumped out at me. And I think probably in a weird way, you know, you're a teenage boy when you first seen this film, the sex scenes are probably one of the first things I'm watching it for, let's be honest. I'm like, oh, you know, because, you know, right? Yeah. Right? I mean, as a 35-year-old, I can't pretend that I don't sometimes still, you know, when I first saw that film in my teenage years, you know, I think that's part of why it stuck out so much. But, like, it's the themes that made it last, you know? It's the, that made it stick with me so much. And it'll be a film that I revisit 20,000 times. I wrote papers in high school, in college, and now all over the internet pieces on this film because I always come back to it. And I mean, I like the book too. Don't get me wrong. And there's a whole nother series of stuff to write about in the differences between the book and the film, and the, you know, the way that Kubrick chose to end the film a chapter short of the book, which basically means it's a darker ending as opposed to a much happier ending. But there's a lot of that, but really when it comes down to it, you know, I really struggle with is I watch a man who was literally had his free will taken away from him. And that to me is it's an affront to God, you know, God. So this guy is doing some horrible, heinous shit. And I mean, some really horrible, heinous shit. But I still think that God wouldn't be like, yeah, let's just make it so anytime he wants to do anything that might even be tangentially related to this, he's just going to throw up and become basically useless. And the manner in which they program him is pure torture. I look at that, and I work in the field of corrections. And so there's like a whole nother element now that I think of when I think of, you know, corporal punishment and where does that fit in? And there's just so much to wrestle with. And it all really comes back to a lot of my worldview, which is based in, you know, a certain view of God that I have.
No, absolutely. And that's why I think a good pick on this is, When they take away that and he's put through the ringer and they're deprogramming him, with taking away that free will, it also takes away the opportunity of repentance and also real true change of the heart. It becomes this mechanical device that kind of, like you said, is an affront to God.
Right.
This idea of, okay, if I do something wrong, it's only wrong because of this physical reaction, not actually understanding the effects of your actions or the harm that it causes. And without being able to acknowledge that, without developing that empathy, you've taken away a chance for like actual repentance.
Right. Well, which is interesting.
It's the cornerstone of Christianity.
Right. Exactly it. Yo, when you look at, I mentioned the difference between the book and the film. And one of the interesting things is the film ends with him actually coming to a legitimate real repentance. That's what the book ends with. The film ends with him realizing he's overcome the deprogramming and then staring at the camera and making you think, oh, he's going to fuck shit up again. So, so there's a whole, like, it's literally a chapter more where he starts to go back to his old ways and was like, no, you know what? I'm growing up, you know? And so it's like, oh, look, you know, people actually can come to a place, you know, on their own. But that's, like I said, that's a whole other discussion between the book and the film. But what film do you bring with us today, or films do you bring with us today as ones that are good examples for you of really this intersection for you?
Well, for me, mine, I'll be honest, it's not as in depth.
Okay.
It's just, a lot of times when I think of these two ideas kind of intersecting, the person that comes to mind is always Abel Ferreira, especially his earlier work. When it's still, he's just, his films are just mired in just the muck, in the shit. But there's always this theme of just regular men and women in this world dealing with something irrational,
mm-hmm.
dealing with this world that they're just not made to exist in. And I mean, even you go to Driller Killer, there's this theme of faith and gentrification and these deeper concepts buried in one of the ugliest, nastiest, I don't even think you can call it a slasher. It's just this bizarre period piece,
right,
of a man out of time dealing with an irrational world. And I don't think it's ever by accident in his films that there is that reoccurring theme where you see the church, you see the man who says he's his father and Driller Killer.
Right.
These themes are always revisited. You know, as well as, you know, the imagery throughout, you know, Bad Lieutenant, which is, you know, in your face. You know, that film is about in your face with struggling with faith, free will. What I get more from Abel Ferreira, more than what his films say, is that I can associate and I can put myself in the shoes, because I feel like he is always struggling through both sides of it on screen.
Mm-hmm.
There's something almost uncontrollable in his films that he has to be able to put in that religion, put in this imagery, even when it doesn't fit.
Right.
I think he's similar to most human beings, where it's like, no matter what you're doing, your personal faith, what you're raised with, what your beliefs are evolving into, are always going to affect what you do.
Right.
Whether you're making a rape revenge movie like Miss 45, or you're making Passion of the Christ.
Sure.
Those same ideas and those same paradigms are always going to reoccur and pop up in your thing. And as you know, later in his career, films like Mary, he's just going full hog into it. But I really think Abel Ferreira is one of those guys that really kind of embodies the ideas that we're discussing on this podcast.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he was raised in, you know, extremely Italian Catholic. You know, I mean, it's so what he is. You know, he's a New York City Italian Catholic. I grew up in North Jersey, so I know a lot of that type. And that he is that type, you know. Like a lot of my friends' parents are essentially Abel Ferreira without a camera.
Right.
So I see that a lot, and a lot of them do also kind of have the same like weird conflicted, like the church is so part of who they are, and at the same time a lot of them aren't even necessarily part of the church for real, but they still kind of go, and it's a really interesting cultural thing. But like, he's an interesting character. I watched Driller Killer on the Blu-ray when it came out from Arrow last year, and then it also came with some really good special features, and one of them was his documentary on Mulberry Street. I think it's just called Mulberry Street, the street he grew up on in Bronx, Brooklyn, whatever the heck it is.
Bronx.
What I thought. And it's such an interesting thing, just because it's about the San Gennaro Festival or whatever, and it's totally, like, it's totally really just about the Italian-American culture, to be honest, more than anything else. And him, and his kind of weird, conflicted, you know, relationship with his old neighborhood. And it's so cool to watch this man just, you know, interact. And you know, and then you watch his early films, especially, like you're saying, you know, The Driller Killer, The Mid-45s. You know, that stuff's dirty as hell. I mean, the guy came out of the porn scene first, you know. I mean, it's not like he didn't, but, you know, the porn scene, as an interesting aside, the porn scene of the 70s versus what we think of as pornography today are two completely different things. There's just like this whole world that existed as its own kind of separate sleazy Hollywood, I think. Back then, well, Hollywood's pretty sleazy itself, but I mean, another sleazier on screen, at least Hollywood. And it's interesting. I recently stumbled, I don't even know how I stumbled across, when looking at like old films and stuff about the Alice in Wonderland film from 76, I think it is. That's like kind of an infamous like porn musical fantasy film. I don't even know what to call it. I watched some clips. I haven't actually watched the film because it's a, you know, 2 hour long porn film, which, you know, whatever, but it's I watched some clips and they're like, it's a straight on musical. It's an Alice in Wonderland with random scenes of nudity and sex, you know, like
that's Kristen DeBell, right?
I think so. I don't remember for sure. Only recently stumbled across it, but it's funny because I know that there are obviously like parody films and stuff today, but like that, it seemed so different. It seemed like it was actually trying to be art, and it was actually trying to be like, you know, a real film. And it's just funny to me because it is a completely different like world than, you know, the weird websites and things that are out now, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And like people like Anthony Spinelli, who made movies like Sex World, Nothing to Hide, they're legitimate movies, and watching them minus the, you know, the sex scenes, it's a coherent plot. It's working out, because like Sex World is, you know, it's a Westworld ripoff. But it's like this relationship drama. The people are speaking frankly about, like, you know, monogamy, you know, marriage, happiness. It's all these incredibly deep and kind of dark themes plugged through this, you know, this sleazy 70s porno movie. And I mean, yeah, I think once you balance those two different worlds where you had now, but see, I think that plays into what films and movies are overall. Everything is content at this point.
Right.
So these websites are cranking out content. They're not making films. And mm-hmm. I think that trickles down. I mean, I know they always say porn affects everything, but that trickles down into a lot of, you know, different mediums. The same way you're not seeing as many big, heavy films. You're seeing more television, more content for, you know, the Netflix, the Shutters, the Hulus, which I love them all, and I watch a lot of this stuff. But that trickle down is always deciding what, you know, where we're going. So I think, you know, looking back on that era, you see a lot of guys, and a lot of guys who came out of that world, you know, building talent, building a portfolio to eventually cross over. Yet, and you know, even guys in the 80s like Greg Darken, those guys, I mean, they were making just weird shit, just bizarre art films that they're like, okay, now quick, let's do some sex, and then let me get back to my art film, you know?
Maybe that's a whole episode at some point to discuss too, because it is really interesting.
Yeah, no.
And you said Kristen.
The episode I don't let my mom know.
Right. Well, my mom's a pastor, but you know, I don't think I'd care. Whatever. Listen, Chris, you said it was Kristen DeBell or Christine DeBell or something. Isn't she the girl from Meatballs?
Yeah, that's a girl from Meatballs and a talking cat.
A talking cat I've not seen. I've of course heard of it because I listened to the Eric Roberts Is the Fucking Man podcast.
Oh, that's a certified classic.
Well, maybe that's one we won't discuss, because I don't think it quite fits in the genre that we're looking at. But nonetheless, so basically, moving forward here, what we're gonna do is take some different topics and specific directors and films with each episode and spend some time on each one, breaking them down, maybe explaining a little bit with how we first discovered them. Maybe some of them are ones we were just discovering now. Some of them are ones that we discovered a long time ago. Hopefully introducing each other to some films, you know, because I'm sure there's a lot of stuff that you watched or I watched that we haven't both watched. So that'll be exciting and fun. And
absolutely.
Yeah, and that's you know, that's the beauty of this kind of stuff, is sharing this stuff with folks. And really, I can't wait to have some guests at some point too to wrestle with some of this stuff. You know, I in preparing for the show, I was mentioning to you, you know, I went to a Christian college, so did you. So I happen to know a lot of people of faith, and over the years, I've gotten to know a lot of them who are actually into a lot of this kind of stuff too. And so I have specifically some priests and pastors in mind to talk to about, you know, all different topics, you know, as far as the types of films and the types of things that, you know, and probably some folks who really love some films that, you know, nobody else in their world would be okay with them loving. But you know, and none of them are people who I think, based on my knowledge of them, would be all that concerned with their identity being linked to liking these things, because most of them are pretty open about it. But even so, maybe there'll be times where we have pastors using another name or such. But I think it'll be really exciting to have some other voices who are in the world of faith in the church and whatnot. I'd also love to have people of other faiths who are into, you know, this kind of stuff, explore where it fits with theirs, because, you know, I'm not as knowledgeable about, you know, the Muslim faith and the Buddhist faith, but, you know, hey, if I know people who kind of, you know, are of those faiths and those faiths don't jive with this stuff that well either, then maybe they can shed some light. You know, I think I mentioned to you that I definitely mentioned to you that I once preached a sermon at my mom's church that was based on a movie called The Taquacores, which is about Muslim punk rock guys. And it's funny because there was a lot about the writer of the book that film's based on. I really got way into his writing, starting with that book. Because a lot of the struggles he had with where he fit and stuff in the Muslim world are struggles that I faced, even though I'm in the Christian world. And like, so there was so much about that lined up that I'd love to explore that more with folks too.
Right. And I mean, I think culturally, everyone who's involved, I mean, this is, for the most part, I mean, not all of it, but a lot of this is out. It's already so outsider art.
Right.
To where no matter what culture you're from, a lot of this stuff's just not going to be acceptable. I mean, like, you know, whether I'm sitting down with, you know, Joe Schmo on the bus, or, you know, a minister, sit down and watching Last House on Dead End Street. Ooh. It's not going to jive with most folks.
No,
but I mean, I think that's something that hopefully we'll be able to get involved with people of other faiths, other cultures, and be able to you know, continue to revisit these themes as I get a better handle on my mindset,
right,
how it works with me.
Right. And well, and I think, you know, I don't know if I'll ever have a full handle on that, but you know, I at least it's something to continue to wrestle with. And I think that that's what great film and great art does, is it makes you wrestle with who you are, how you got there, where you're going, you know? And that's, I think, why I have always loved the arts in general, and really as a medium, why I've fallen in love with film.
No, absolutely. And I mean, and hopefully we'll be able to keep, you know, keep exploring these ideas. And also, listeners, throw stuff out at us.
Oh, please.
Things that interest you dealing with these things, even if it's not directly dealing with these things, I think it's such a broad spectrum. Throw those ideas at us and email us. Let us know what you think on this kind of stuff, because we want to build a show not only for us to work out our weird, fucked up brains, but also, you know, tackle questions that we're not even considering.
Right, and well, that's important, and I want to hear them from all sides. You know, I mean, I want to hear people who are like, well, no, you shouldn't be watching this, and this is why, and this is what the Bible says. I'm cool with that. Now, mind you, I probably disagree with a lot of it, but that doesn't mean I don't want to hear it, because maybe I'm not thinking about something. But I also want to hear then people who might have different views of faith and different views of things and where they fit. You know, this to me, this is a podcast, you know, that's about the intersection of these worlds of our worldview, our faith, and art and culture. And so to me, you know, that's always been something I've been really interested in exploring. It's why I created the Farsighted in the beginning. Even though I kind of cover a really wide variety of stuff, and everybody does, one of the things I always try to get at when it feels appropriate, not forced, but you know, when it kind of makes sense, is where does this kind of film or this kind of music or whatever fit into where, you know, my journey is when it comes to, you know, faith and life. So always want to keep exploring that. It's definitely a huge thing for me.
We pretty much reached the end at this point.
Yeah, I think so. We're going to end every podcast, guys, with some recommendations. And most of the time, they'll probably be things that are kind of applicable to what we're talking about that week. But something I watched this week that you're going to laugh about, Blaine, for sure. But I actually think that it wrestles with some great stuff with consumerism. And no, I'm not talking about They Live, because that fits in this perfectly. And that's one of my favorite films of all time. But an interesting film that I think could be a really bizarre companion piece to is Josie and the Pussycats from 2001. I saw this movie in the theater, and it is cheesy teen comedy meets. But really, there's a smart parody in there. And that's what I like about it. It's cheesy as hell. And it's 2001 it came out, but it's very 90s in so many ways when you watch it. But the way that they do the product placement and the consumerism commentary, and then the way it's all about like the mass media, specifically in the music industry, it's so entertaining. My wife had never actually seen it all the way through, so I grabbed a copy and we watched it, and it's just a lot of fun. That's really all it is. It's a lot of fun. So I'm going to recommend, if you want something fun that does actually have some meaning behind it, that probably might mean more now than ever when it comes to consumerism, because we have a guy who was a reality show host in the White House. Maybe it's a good one to watch if you're looking for a lighthearted look at something like that. What do you got for us, Blaine?
Oh, and also, Rosario Dawson, I see you. Holler at me, hit me in the DM. I might respond.
Yo, might respond? Come on now.
Hey, I'm tossing it out there. I don't see any reason why not to.
Love it.
My recommendation this week is 1977 exploitation movie by Robert A. Endelson called Fight for Your Life. I've been meaning to send this over to Justin for about 3 weeks. It's been sitting in a box in my car that I'm going to send eventually. But this film, it's what's most interesting, because on one side, it's just a story about three convicts break out of prison. They show up at a well-to-do black family's home and start playing just kind of a twisted siege game where they continue to terrorize torture and assault the family. What plays into this is the father is kind of at odds with both his faith as a minister and also his identity. William Sanderson, you know, who's usually playing a good guy, he shows up and he is the nastiest white trash racist dude who just spends the entire film testing his faith, trying to push a good man past this to break this, like almost like Joker to Batman. And when it finally takes its turn, it goes nuts, and it embodies not only the sleazy and the nastiness, but also there's a lot more going on in there. And I mean, this is something that I think really will continue to be an interesting and important film, because it's not just dealing with these like caricatures of racism. There's things being worked out in there. Yeah, it seems a little bit corny now. Some of the stuff sounds a little stereotypical, but there's more at odds than that. So I think that's just something that our listeners might dig. It's available on Blue Underground. I'm not sure if it's still in print, but you can find it super cheap. Usually at used bookstores, places like that.
Awesome. And I'm excited to check that one out. There's something about that sounds like really, really freaking interesting. So I'm very excited to check that one out. And that's obviously one once we both have seen it, we'll have to discuss, because it sounds like it'll fit into probably a bunch of topics at different times. So we'll make sure we talk about it when it's appropriate.
No, absolutely. I think that's something we could have a lot of quote-unquote fun. But yeah, no, absolutely. I think it covers a huge array of discussions and with similar films, you know, to be able to kind of team that up with, you know, that are dealing with, you know, the nastiness of racism.
Yeah. So as we wrap up today, I just want to say thanks to everybody for checking us out. I hope you enjoyed our intro music. That's some Wugazi. If you're not familiar with the Wugazi, it was a project that a couple DJs did together with Fugazi and Wu-Tang songs, and it's something we both really appreciate, punk rock and hip-hop, so I thought it was appropriate, and it has a bit of a creepy horror theme to the lyrics if you listen to them. And we're going to be taken out with the local band that I'm into, punk rock band that are friends of mine, called Solarized, who are actually, if you're familiar with the podcast Cinepunks, Josh from Cinepunks, it's his band, one of his like eight bands, to be honest. But
really?
Yeah, Josh has like four, and I think it's four, three, I think it's three bands and solo stuff, if I remember correctly. But
I just assume he's making it up on Cinepunks. I just think he's just
no man. It's good, and so you'll get to hear Solarized then, like everyone else who hasn't heard them, and some good old fashioned punk rock. So so everyone, thanks again for sticking with us. You'll probably hear from us in a couple of weeks. We're looking at doing like twice a month, and then we'll try to announce our, you know, theme a couple days ahead or something. So if anybody wants to try to watch along, they can.
No, sounds good, man. Thanks for checking it out. And like I said, hit us up over at The Farsighted and let us know what you think, what you want us to cover. And you can follow me on Twitter at @Mondo_McLaren. And for you, sir?
At The Painted Man. And you can follow the website, The Farsighted, at The Farsighted. So, yeah, thanks a lot, guys, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
All right, peace.